WPHM now presents Paul Miller's Week in Review.
Well, it was another busy week on the WPHM Morning Show. We started off Monday with news that an underwater water main break just off Harsin's Island had been fixed over the weekend. We talked about it with St. Clair County Emergency Manager Justin Westmiller.
Yeah, so we had quite a few things against us that day on Thursday and Friday. First off, the weather wasn't really good. We had heavy winds and high waves, so it kept us from getting a diver in the water to assess where the issue was and begin the repair. They were able to get a diver in the water first thing Friday morning. They found where the break was. It was about 300 to 400 feet offshore, right in 5 to 7 feet of water, which is pretty shallow. So that helped a little bit with the divers. And then they began the repair Saturday morning and finished it up late Sunday night, last night.
That is amazing and certainly good news. Where do things stand right now for water usage on and around Harsin's Island?
Yeah, so Harsin's Island only in Clay Township has a boil water alert. You can expect an extended boil water alert due to additional testing that needs to be done because that pipeline was open to the environment and river water did get into it. I don't have a timeline, you know, whether it's going to be 3 days or 4 days, but just know that it's going to be extended longer than the normal 2 or 3 day boil water for a broken water main. You can use that water on Harsin's Island for showering, for doing dishes, things like that. They just, if you're going to brush your teeth or ingest the water somehow, we're asking that you boil the water to a rolling boil for at least 1 minute, and then it's potable for eating and drinking.
Is there still bottled water available for people on the island?
Yes, Paul, there is. Bottled water and boxed water is continuing to be distributed at the Harsin's Island Fire Department. Please, anyone who needs bottled water, come on down. We have plenty of it, and we'll get you taken care of.
What does this say about the infrastructure? Maybe it's time to start looking at, replacing that water main or some other things, or making more water available. What is something that folks should be considering moving forward now after this?
Well, I don't want to speak to what Clay Township should or shouldn't do. What I will tell you is when we had a chance to look inside the pipe, it was in very good condition. It did look like this was not an organic failure of the pipe, but it more appeared like something had struck the pipe at some point and caused this failure.
Interesting. Any speculation as to what might have caused it?
No, we don't have a timeline on when it might have been struck. There's no information like that available. They are investigating that still, but the good thing is it did not appear to be an organic failure of the pipe and the infrastructure around the pipe.
And honestly, all things considered, a pretty quick repair, because it sounded to me on Friday like this may be several days of trying to find the leak, let alone repair it. So a pretty good outcome here.
Yeah, I can imagine that if we would have had ice in the river, or if the break would have been farther down the line towards where it's 35 to 40 feet deep, that would have made it much, much more difficult. And I want to commend all of the Clay Township departments and the dive team, the dive company, for all the hard work they did. They really turned this repair around quickly.
Justin Westmiller with us this past Monday morning, talking about that water main break on Harsin's Island. Well, the college football playoffs are underway, this first year of an expanded playoff bracket. Jay Paterno is the son of legendary Penn State coach Joe Paterno. We talked with Jay about the new look of college football and about his new book about it this past Tuesday.
Well, I'm not sure we needed 12 teams. People don't realize that in the 4-team playoff, the average margin of victory in the semifinals was 20 points, over 20 points. So it wasn't like it was that close. But I understand why people want it. It creates a lot of TV content, gets a lot more teams in the mix, creates a lot of excitement. I think the backside eventually, whether it's next year or the year after, is going to be the players that are being asked to play three or four more games are going to want a cut of the money, and that's coming.
Well, college is starting to look more and more like the NFL all the time, isn't it?
No question. And, you know, next year, players are making money with their NIL stuff now, and NIL is a whole nother, you know, what that is supposed to be and what it's become. You know, it used to be that if you had a player, take a kid like J.J. McCarthy at Michigan last year, if Gatorade thought they would get a return on investment by giving him money to represent them, they'd do it. And that's truly NIL. But what you have now is these collectives have created these everybody gets a check. Your third string left tackle is getting $50,000 to do 2 hours a month, posting social media stuff to raise money for the collective, to pay the players, to promote the collective, to raise money, to pay the players, to raise. You get what I'm getting at. It's not real. And then now revenue sharing will be coming next year, so it's become very professionalized.
It really has. You combine that with the transfer portal, and it has really changed the look of the game, hasn't it?
Yeah, you know, you look at coaches right now, and in December they're finding out that players are leaving before they're in a playoff game or in a bowl game, and now they've got to scramble because of the way the calendar is set up. No one's really in charge at the NCAA level because they've lost every lawsuit that they've been involved in pretty much going back the last 10, 12 years. So they're really gun-shy to take charge of the thing. I think this is going to end up with collective bargaining, like you have in the NFL. Not that I'm a fan of that or want that, but I'm also a realist. I'm an old-school guy, but I'm also a realist. That's the only way you're going to get any kind of controls or get some stability in this system, because it's not sustainable right now.
A lot of people were shocked last week when Bill Belichick said that he was going to go coach college at UNC. And the more you think about it, the more you think, well, you know, if college is starting to look more like the NFL, maybe we'll see more NFL coaches heading to college, do you think?
Well, Bill Belichick looked at this and says, I don't have to deal with a team owner. I don't have to deal with a general manager.
Right.
I run the show, and I've got unlimited free agency every year. He probably looked and said, you know, this is not a bad deal. I mean, this is pretty – I can excel. I think he's a guy – I know guys that have played for him. He's a guy that wants to instill certain values and things in young people. I think that you can't do that as well in the NFL. And I'm not one of those people that's scoffing at this. There's a lot of people that think, oh, it won't work because he's too old school. I think people may be very, very surprised how quickly he has success.
A lot of young players are going to want to play for the guy that won all those Super Bowls, right?
No doubt. I mean, you look at what Deion Sanders has done in 2 years in Colorado. Yeah. I think Belichick has that same cachet, maybe even more, because he's got the NFL coaching resume. And you know, if I'm a high school quarterback coming out of high school right now, or if I'm a college quarterback in the transfer portal, I mean, it would be hard to say no to that.
We're talking with Jay Paterno. He's also written a book about the current landscape of college football. It's a work of fiction, but certainly borrows from a lot of what's really going on right now. It's called Blitzed: The All-Out Pressure of College Football's New Era. Tell us a little bit more about the book.
Well, it is fiction, but it's not what I call nonfiction fiction. And I had written a book 4 years ago, and it's set at Ohio State, which I know is a bad word in the state of Michigan, but it's set at Ohio State with a coach coming off, having lost to Michigan, having lost his bowl game. And he's told by the president, I can't hold the trustees off any longer. You've got 1 year to win. So it takes you through that. Now, that was written 3 or 4 years ago, so that was a different era. And once that book was done and people read it, they said, well, what happens next to this guy? And what about what's going on now? And I've been consulting in NIL with a group that's all over the country for 3 or 4 years now. So I am very aware and have my hands and my ears to ground, hands in and ears to ground on things that are going on at schools all over the country. So this is what I call nonfiction fiction. It is a fiction book, but it's all based on real stories that are going on. And it's easier to write them as a novel because when you start writing things as nonfiction and you start assigning certain things that happen to certain schools or people, I'm an old school Italian. I mean, you want to be careful when you start your car, when you start telling tales out of class, so to speak. So this is the first real tell-all book about what's going on right now in college football.
Any matchups in the playoffs that intrigue you? Anything that looks particularly interesting? What are the standouts for you?
Well, I think the Notre Dame-Indiana game is going to be a lot of fun to watch because, you know, everybody is questioning, is Indiana really that good? Who have they beaten? But you could say the same argument about Penn State and Texas.
Sure.
I think it was Joel Klatt said the best thing on Penn State's resume is who they've lost to, and the same thing with Texas. So, you know, how will SMU play up here? Weather's not supposed to be real bad, so it shouldn't be too big a deal. But SMU's got some talented players and the same kind of mobile quarterback that gave Penn State problems in the Big Ten championship game against Oregon. I think that Texas Clemson could be interesting. Dabo Swinney certainly has been in this moment. But I think when you looked around, too, if Ohio State were to beat Tennessee,
mm-hmm.
you're looking at Oregon as the number one seed, who's probably getting what is the most talented team in this tournament, and a team that's very, very angry because they lost to Michigan again.
Yeah.
And I know that, again, yeah. where you're at, that's a
oh,
good
yeah,
thing.
Yeah. Sure.
But, I mean, so I think you know there are some really intriguing potential second-round matchups as well.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun to see how this all shakes out. And I mean, Oregon, obviously, they've won. I mean, they're good, right? I mean, they're not there's no they're not fakes at all, are they? I mean, they're the
no,
real
no,
deal.
I was at the Ohio State Oregon game in Eugene, and I came back from that game watching them live and saying they're physical up front
yeah.
and they can run on the edge. And they've got a quarterback right now that's playing a lot like Russell Wilson did his last year at Wisconsin. Same kind of height, same kind of mobility, same ability to drop deep balls in. I think the Ohio State-Oregon game, if Ohio State beats Tennessee, and I want to qualify that, if Ohio State beats Tennessee, which I think they should, you know, that could really be ultimately that could be the national championship game if I were reseeding all these teams. Because of how good they are. But Oregon, Dan Lanning, spent some time with him when I was out there. Dan Lanning is for real. Oregon's not going anywhere anytime soon. He's building a program, not a team, which I think is a very, very different thing. There are a lot of teams that went out and just said, let's go grab all these guys out of the portal and put together this really talented team. But, yeah, that's good for this year, but what happens next year? You can do that every year. And I think that's going to be the thing. I think Oregon is building something that can endure.
Jay Paterno talking college football with us on Tuesday. The 100th anniversary year in Marysville draws to a close. We visited with the mayor of Marysville, Kathy Heyman, on Wednesday.
We ended this year-long celebration with two very special events. On Monday, December 16th, we celebrated a Marysville resident, Shirley Grigowski, her 100th birthday, which was extra special. We celebrated that at our Christmas parade on December 7th, but her actual birthday was December 16th. Her whole entire family joined us on stage at the amphitheater. We sang happy birthday to her. It was extremely special. She's a beautiful lady, and I wish her a wonderful 100th year. And we also resurrected a longtime Christmas event. Mayor Pro Tem Winston came up with the idea that we acknowledge a home that's beautifully decorated for Christmas, and we did that also on Monday night. We honored Jason Galbraith and Amy Conlin and their son Colton. They live at 702 Colorado, and we gave them a gift card and Colton a gift, and it's a family affair. And if you drive by 702 Colorado, you can tell a lot of work was put into it. So I'm hoping this is going to continue as a tradition in Marysville, whether it's council does it or beautification or rec department, I don't know, but hopefully we can continue recognizing these homes that are beautifully decorated.
What a great idea. And, of course, Marysville Park is all decked out for the holidays again this year. The Christmas in the park is just beautiful.
It is. It certainly is. It's a very nice drive-through and gets you in the season if you're not there yet.
Coming up in 2025, there will be a change on Marysville City Council. A longtime council member has resigned from City Council. Tell us more about that.
Yes, Dave Barber, he put in his resignation Monday night. That was his last meeting on December 16th. His grandson, Grayson Levin, got to lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance. And he's been serving for 11 years on City Council. And before that, he was the captain of the fire department. So he basically spent almost his whole career serving the city of Marysville, whether it's in the capacity of the fire department or city council, and he will be missed. I worked very closely with him, you know, during my terms, and he is an asset to our council and made us think about all areas of a situation and try to, you know, just educate us all. So we will definitely miss him. So we are taking applications, if you will. We need to appoint somebody within the next 60 days to that seat, according to our charter. So we're accepting letters of interest now until probably around January 17th. What we'd like to do is make that decision at our January 27th council meeting. So if anyone is interested in serving on the city council, please submit your letter of interest to the city of Marysville.
Very good. The finishing touch is being put on the new kayak launch as well.
Yes, our Veterans Park is going through a total transformation. And, you know, we did have a kayak launch there, but it was not equipped for the current of the St. Clair River. So the new kayak, it's sustainable, and parking lot took a massive redesign, and it's you can get the feel of what it's going to look like. But springtime, you know, we'll see evidence of, you know, the whole project, because it's got different gardens and different parking spaces. So it really, the parking lot was really modified, but it's got a very secure kayak launch, so that should last and stand the test of time.
We've been talking a lot here in Port Huron about the major construction project coming in 2026 in downtown Port Huron, Michigan Department of Transportation leading that. There's also plans in 2026 for the commercial corridor in Marysville to get a road makeover. Tell us more about that.
Yes, we're excited for that. As you know, Gratiot is, you know, very heavily traveled in the city of Marysville. It connects Marysville to Port Huron. And we're certainly in need. You know, it's been many years since that road has had attention. And the best part is it's a multi-million dollar project and it's no cost to the city. So that's a bonus. So we're looking forward to that. I know that's out in the future in 2026, but it will be here before we know it.
It will indeed. Any thoughts on the end of the year and looking ahead to 2025, Mayor?
Yeah, we've been talking about our bike path for multi-years, and hopefully that bike path will get completed next year. We're hoping that, you know, that's the case. We've got some other commercial projects that are on the table that we're doing research on, and hopefully they'll come to fruition. We've got a lot of exciting things, and obviously our road work continues. We try to knock that, you know, multiple roads out every year, and, you know, our relationship that we have with SC4, that's going to continue. That's an extremely strong strong relationship that we have between the city and the college, and, you know, who knows what different, you know, things will happen with that and enhancing the fields that we have. But, you know, we've got great city staff that we're extremely thankful for, great administration, and, you know, I consider myself very lucky to serve as mayor as this fine community. We're very lucky.
Well, Mayor, have a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. We look forward to talking again in 2025.
Yes, just so everybody knows, our offices will be closed next week, the 23rd and 24th and 25th, and the following week, December 31st and January 1st. And, you know, Merry Christmas and Happy New Year to you. And it is hard to believe. We got to figure out what we're going to talk about next year, because this year, every month, all we talked about was 100 years. So
yeah,
we've got to come up with some other interesting topics.
Kathy Hayman, Mayor of Marysville, with us this past Wednesday on the morning show. We finished up the week on Friday talking with Andrew Beeler about the chaotic end of the legislative year in Lansing and the end of the road for him as a state representative. Andrew Beeler with us on Friday.
A big part of our success came from what was not passed, because in 180 bills, I was probably a no on 170 of them. You know, there was a few zoning bills here and there that I thought were maybe good policy. But again, you know, we're looking at a house that's going to flip control in just a few weeks, right? The legislature opens second week of January. And there's a lot of bills there that's like, this is decent policy, but I think it could be better. Let's wait 2 weeks and have it be done. The only time critical issues that we were looking at were those tip credits, the sick leave, and the road funding. Road funding, of course, you know, that is something that can wait till next term, but the fact that we aren't even talking about it was a little disappointing.
Anything about this lame duck session, Andrew, that makes you wish you were going to go back in 2025 or just glad that you're not going back in 2025?
You know, these fights, they're a part of the job, and they happen when people are really passionate about issues. So I think I've done a good job in the last 4 years trying to keep my head out of some of those political fights and just being clear-eyed about what the priorities of my community are and representing those in Lansing. So it comes with the territory. I've known that from the beginning. So, you know, I'm looking forward to seeing Rep-elect Pavlo come in and continue to represent us. I think he's going to do a really good job.
Have you had a chance to speak to him, give him any advice as he gets set to take over your spot?
Yeah, of course, Joe has a lot of people around him who have experience in that space, but he and I have spoken a couple times, and just, you know, the constituent stuff is the biggest thing to me, making sure that gets turned over and no ball gets dropped when it comes to the needs of the constituents with what they need from their state government.
As you look back on your time in Lansing, Andrew, what are you most proud of? What accomplishments stand out to you?
Yeah, I think, you know, every time you've asked me that question, my answer has always been the work that we've been able to do with substance use disorders. And I got to give a lot of credit to Blue Water Recovery and Outreach right here in our community. They're a leader in the state in the recovery community organization space, and the education that they were able to provide me on the needs of that community and the good work they are doing and how the state can be helpful to them. That's a case in point of what this job is about, right? This is a little nonprofit doing great work, changing the lives of people in our community for the better. And the state government a lot of times gets in the way. And so if the only thing I got done in the last 4 years was to help raise awareness to the good work that RCOs are doing across the state and in our community, then I can be very happy with that.
Any political plans for the future, Andrew?
You know, I don't know. I'm really focused on, you know, making sure that Joe gets started on the right foot. And we'll see, right? I wouldn't rule anything out, but politics is interesting. I'm looking forward to taking a step back and playing a different role in the community for now. But we'll see we'll see.
Yeah. Tell us a little bit about what you're going to be doing now that you're not going to be a state rep anymore.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's been something that I've been working on for, boy, at this point, 8 months or thinking about for 8 months. But with nothing firmly decided just yet, it'll certainly be something local. I'm not going anywhere. I'm not leaving my entire family's here. You know, this is my hometown, so I won't be going anywhere. It'll be something local and something that just gives me the ability to stay active in the community. That's what I loved about my job in Lansing was an excuse to get around and, you know, go to the Blue Water Chamber events and go to the nonprofit, you know, events at the end of the year, right? That was the best part of the job, getting around the community and chatting with folks like you, getting to know folks around the area. So I'm not going to leave that. The specifics, I think, remain to be seen, but you'll know when I know.
And I bet you're looking forward to not having to make that trip over to Lansing quite as often, huh?
I'd be lying. I'd be lying if I said I was going to miss that 2-hour drive out there. I know my tires will certainly appreciate it on my car. So it'll be a shorter commute, too. There, I'll commit to that.
All right. Very good. Andrew, I appreciate the update. Thanks for joining us. Congratulations on the end of your tenure as state rep. And Merry Christmas and Happy New Year.
Thanks, Paul. Merry Christmas.
Take care. Bye-bye. State Representative Andrew Beeler with us this past Friday on the WPHM Morning Show. Thanks for listening. Be sure and tune into the Morning Show every weekday, 6 till 10 on WPHM.